Hasty dude treated you pretty well, considering, Gustav said. Most everyone else wound up getting zapped somehow. All you got were ineffectual butterflies.
That was my fault, Fia said, because she felt it to be true, even if it wasn't. It was why she wanted nothing but to tend roses and hide from all the trouble the world kept bringing to her door. Even here, trying simply to pass through, she'd endangered everyone with that horrible reminder of her past, and with the way she'd been so busy dealing with it that she'd neglected the Lamatar. At least she hadn't gotten worsely killed again. Or had that really been him?
Grinda, was that really your nephew? Or some kind of weird copy, or...
She's frozen. Can't talk or even avoid being pooped on, Gustav explained as he trotted over to commiserate. And I don't think this was your fault. I mean, that umlaut guy came after everyone. Speaking of which, who or what was that kid?
Boltro groaned and sat up, holding her head.
Cool. I'd like to know that too, because he rung my bell good, he did.
Fia shook her head and clutched at her wound, putting pressure on it.
I really don't want to talk about that. I mean, obviously, that was a traumatic thing from my childhood, but I don't think I can share it with you. I'm sorry.
Oh. Well, I can share mine. I'm sorry about the Lamatar, everybody,
Paltrow said.
When I was young, they ate my parents when we were trying to cross the Lama Drama. Me and my brother, Morvin, watched them do it too. Still have nightmares. They were gonna eat us for dessert, they was. But we got saved by a nice caravan of cool people. And we got sent to Borix for adoption, where we were lucky enough to have Lord Toby take us in.
Toby sniffed and turned red.
You never told me about the Lamatars?
He mumbled, then turned his gaze sharply to the unconscious man slumped nearby. He pointed at the sleeping form in the concert t-shirt.
Who?
He demanded. Is that...
Oh, bother,
Arcabella murmured, then spoke up louder.
That's my da. We should probably go before he wakes up, especially since he's still got bongos. He used to be okay, but after my mom left, he went a little balmy. He was yelling at me in the Earl's castle when everyone fell asleep, and it's like I've been waiting all these years for him to wake up and continue the castigation. He can be quite nagful.
I think you mean emotionally abusive, Gustav said.
Now that I think about it...
Before she could get too deep into the past, Fia pressed on.
What about your mum?
She's dead. Maybe.
Maybe?
Fia asked.
We haven't been in touch for quite some time, on account of her leaving my dad to run away with a halfling CPA and getting awards for being great at doing taxes. But I received a small sum in the mail a few years back, along with a receipt for a frugal but tasteful funeral. So I think she might actually be dead.
Hearing this, the mighty Fia frowned down at Argabella, whose head rested on her lap. And then she felt her expression soften, because everything inside her went gooey. She realized that even more than roses, even more than a proper set of armor, she wanted to be kind and generous, and the whole range of happy adjectives to this truly unique woman. For a long, long time. She felt luminous, and certain about this, but equally afraid that perhaps that moment, when she was lightheaded from blood loss and Arcabella was probably concussed, was not the right moment to say everything out loud. So she confined herself to saying,
You know, your da was wrong about everything, don't you?
I don't know. Maybe he was right about some things.
Oh, no. Like what?
Arcabella grinned through a bloody mouth.
I'm never going to find a decent man, not the way I am.
Fia laughed, delighted.
Okay, okay, he was right about that one thing.
Not to rush anyone, Gustav said, but why don't we rush along now?
How is Grinda going to rush along,
Paltrow wondered,
if she can't move?
Fia gently helped Argabella stand, and then clambered to her feet, feeling somewhat dizzy. She needed NyQuil, and fumbled about for it, before remembering that they had used it all to heal themselves from the acid leeches.
Well, Perhaps the healer that Yor spoke of can help with that. And with everything. I'll carry her.
What about those tongue things he talked about? Gustav asked.
That's right. We need to watch out for them.
What's all this? Lord Toby asked. He'd missed much of it since he'd been the first to fall.
Something about a nice tonguing?
Fia pointed to the open door.
That's the way out, and supposedly there's a healer near the exit, if we can live long enough to get there. Yor seemed to doubt we'd survive the tongues, whatever they are.
This comment finally tore Poltro's attention away from her headache.
Cool! There was a sign warning us about them, remember? All the other signs have been true so far, so I guess we'd better watch out.
What are they going to do? Lick us to death?
The Dark Lord sneered. Fia nodded at him.
We are all messed up, Lord Toby, except for you and Gustav. So I think it's up to you two now to save us from a licking.
What? I gotta work with him. He wants to kill me, Gustav protested.
If he does, he'll answer to me,
Fia said. She pointed at her eyes with two fingers and then pointed them at Lord Toby.
I'll be watching, although I wish you two would make peace. We fought together against an impossible enemy and won. That means we are a legitimate dungeon party. We can join the Union and everything.
The Dark Lord had no retort to make, so he straightened his robe and inspected himself, brushed some clinging croutons away, but still missed the moth in his beard. Argabella checked on her lute, strummed an experimental chord, fiddled with the tuning, then sang the new, improved version of the Ouchie song for them all. It helped ease their pain somewhat, and Fia's wound clotted. Encouraged by that, the mighty Fia picked up Grinda and draped the witch over her injured left shoulder like a sack of barley, keeping her sword arm free.
If we get in a fight, I might have to drop you, Fia said, but I'll do my best to protect you and your glass wand. I'll just slip that gently into my scabbard. I keep it oiled and ready. Oh, look at that. A perfect fit. Now I'll just keep my sword handy, should we need to rub out any obstacles as we venture down the tunnel.
So we're just leaving those bodies there and you're all cool with that, Gustav said.
Yeah, they're not real,
Arcabella said.
They bled real blood and behaved like real bodies, he pointed out. Worstly in the Lomitar did, anyway.
Fia shrugged.
So, wizards can do some amazing stuff. Right, Lord Toby?
The Dark Lord swelled with pride.
That is correct.
Then please proceed to be amazing and get us out of these catacombs.
Gustav and Toby led the party this time, both of them going slowly, alert for an ambush. Argabella and Poltro backed them up, albeit with woozy steps, as they still felt unsteady from the beatings they'd received. Fia brought up the rear with the sandwich over her shoulder, and from that position no one could see her face as she struggled to deal with the facts. She had been the one who insisted they take the fork that led to Olfactory, where they'd almost died. She'd been the one who'd insisted on coming through the catacombs, where they'd almost died. Only a sneeze and disorganized teamwork from at least some of the party had saved them from certain death. She wondered if she had been cursed in the past, unawares, to be a mortal danger to her companions. The opposite of a chosen one, maybe an unchosen one? That would almost be a relief, because then she wouldn't be responsible for bringing those closest to her to such harm. Or bringing accidental murder to literal innocent bystanders. Or, now her worst fear, causing harm to Argabella. She longed for the day when she would be a mortal danger only to the aphids on her roses. Fighting no longer held such an appeal, for all that the sword felt hungry in her hand. She shook her head, willing that feeling away. Before, she'd been running away from something. Now, perhaps, she was running towards something even better. Fia dwelled in a prison of regret for an untold while, her thoughts weighing her down far more than the dead weight of the sandwich on her shoulder. But when the dimensions of the hallway changed and she saw skeletons on the floor, She knew yet more danger was ahead.
"So, these bones,"
she said, but she didn't actually have to say anything. Everyone was already tense and on the lookout. The width of the corridor instantly doubled, always a sign that something particularly horrid was about to appear. The rock walls were stained with dried blood, which Lord Toby's algae covered but did not hide, making everything glow brown, and the ceiling had doubled in height.
"A bit of extra illumination might be wise, I think,"
the hedge wizard said, touching his hand to either wall and encouraging his algae to grow up and spread down the length of this new space. Scattered bones will make a person cautious that way.
"I don't see any tongues,"
Gustav said.
"Just an awful lot of dead folks."
"They didn't all die of natural causes right here, though," Toby said. "Let us proceed, but keep looking around, including above. The height of this chamber makes me suspect that an attack may come from overhead."
12 whole steps into the expanded chamber, and the Dark Lord was proven right. A wet, slithering noise was the only warning before something slimy and pink bungeed down from the ceiling and plunged into a soft bit behind Gustav's right shoulder. He screamed an outraged goat scream, and the thing retracted, tearing out a chunk of his flesh as it did so. Everyone followed the trail of the muscular weapon and saw that it was indeed a tongue being retracted into the greedy maw of a toothsome red thing crouching on a hidden shelf near the ceiling. Possessed of cruel yellow eyes and a huge mouth that must have largely served as tongue storage, it could safely take bites out of them from a distance and seemed in fact perfectly designed to do so. And it was not alone. There were many more of them appearing all along the tops of the walls, drawn by Gustav's scream, and some were even approaching down the hall on the floor, gurgling in their hunger for fresh meat. They were utterly like frogs, in all the ways that are terrible, and weaponized. Fia realized she had heard tell of these creatures before. The dread necromancer Steve had mentioned them once during a particularly bad attempt at seduction.
"These are hook tongues," she cried. "The only way out is through. The longer we wait, the more concentrated they'll become. Go! We have to charge and hope they don't eat us to death one lick at a time."
The goat, at least, knew what it meant to charge. He lowered his head and ran straight at the hook tongues coming for him. Not to be outdone, Lord Toby was only a step or two behind, throwing up his hands and shouting,
"Leet Naloga!"
as fast as he could, and with each repetition of the chant, a loaf of incredibly dense ciabatta shot forth from each of his fingers, which he waggled around to make the mark through the air in as many directions as possible. And thus, while every member of the party suffered unwelcome tongues creating new bloody orifices in their flesh and then ripping out succulent bites of it, at least they were spared far worse by the random protection of loaves of bread flying through the air. The hook tongue speared through the dough and retracted, giving the creatures an unexpected carb load instead of a bloody protein snack, and completely destroying any ongoing ketogenesis. Fia knew that poor Grinda was suffering an inordinate amount of tonguing, but since the witch was still frozen, at least she couldn't complain. The best thing Fia could do for them both was to get the heck out, and if the sandwich lost massive chunks of buttock, at least she knew how to dress to hide her flaws. Gustav's horns proved impregnable to the hook tongues, and several squishy bodies deflected off his head as he charged into the hideous monsters that were foolish enough to stand in his way. When he plowed through them and trampled their bodies, they stayed down, unable to recover in time to do any more damage. Fia was able to slice through a few of the tongues coming for her by sheer luck, but she still felt them stab into her and steal away her vitality every few steps. Poltro was in much the same situation, hacking away as she ran, confidence restored in her knife, but poor Argabella had only her butter knife, no defense against the creatures at all, and she simply ran as best she could, while chunks of her neck, shoulders, and chest were sheared away and gobbled up by hungry mouths. Were it not for the goat plowing the path ahead and the bread wizard protecting them from above, they never would have lived to bleed to death on the other side. But after some distance that seemed interminable but truly wasn't, Gustav had no more hook tongues to ram, and the ceiling went back to being a normal height that didn't promise hidden monstrosities. Poltro barely made it out, crawling the last few steps, but Argabella fell down before she could get there, bleeding from so many wounds.
Dobby!
Fia shouted.
Help me!
The Dark Lord turned, bloodied and frenzied, his fingers extended, forming a veritable ciabatta umbrella over them as Fia carefully picked up Argabella under an arm while still clutching her sword. She couldn't use her scabbard because Grinda's wand was still in there. She carried two women now as her strength waned and she could barely move. Every step was an eternity, and her muscles quivered with exhaustion. Behind them, hook tongues plunged into breads with thaps and thwaps and retracted without penetrating the party. But Fia had lost so much blood. They all had. Groaning and growling, she staggered forward past Lord Toby, past the wounded rogue and goat, who stared at her all forlorn as if she were stepping into the grave, and then her knees would no longer bear all the weight she carried, and they buckled, sending her crashing to the ground with her burdens forgotten. Her eyelids were so heavy, heavy as the world. At last, even they fluttered closed. 16. In the spectacular, if tentacular, hut of Belladonna the Healer. Something soft and cool caressed Argabella's forehead, and she sighed in comfort. Or more accurately, she attempted to sigh in comfort, and ended up throwing up in her mouth a little, as sighing requires that one breathe in deeply, which forces one to smell anything in one's particular vicinity. In this case, with her eyes still shut, Argabella had to assume she was being licked across the face by a troll with gingivitis who'd recently partaken of fresh garlic and sardines and possibly eaten another, even sicker troll for breakfast. Her eyes burst open, but everything was dark and fuzzy. She soon realized that this was because she was staring directly into someone's extremely furry armpit. She gasped, and that only made it worse, as some of the long hairs sort of wafted toward her open mouth.
Help!
She said, almost in a whisper.
Ah, darling, you're finally awake.
The voice was nearly a purr, sensuous and womanly, and the sort of voice one generally hears only when drinking reddish liquors in the darker corners of the more sultry sort of halfling bar. The tuft of black hair disappeared, replaced by the face of a beautiful woman, whose thick eyebrows and rippling hair were of the same dark black. She was in her early 30s, maybe, and she had the sort of smile that suggested you were somehow already sharing a delicious secret with her. Despite the fact that her entire body hurt and her nostril hairs were singed, Argabella had no choice but to smile back.
I am Belladonna, and this is my love shack. Welcome. You've been through quite an ordeal.
Hey, love shack?
Yes. Just outside the Grange.
But where are my friends? We were looking for a healer.
Belladonna smushed a finger to Argabella's lips, the long red nail pressing in.
Shh! So many questions. You're still weak.
The finger left Argabella's lips, leaving behind the flavor of dirt and vanilla.
Your friends are here and safe. I am the healer you sought. And my apprentice and I have been lovingly tending to you all. You've been sleeping for some time, and you are the first one awake.
Belladonna stood, her white healer's robe slithering around her ample curves. The garment had holes cut out in the shoulders and a deep, drooping neckline. But the red cross Argabella was looking for was right there, stretched across the woman's voluptuous chest.
You're the healer. But I thought healers were...
Argabella couldn't quite find the right word. Clean seemed insulting, but prudish and nerdy, and yes, also clean, seemed a bit too on the nose. Belladonna smiled from beside the table, where she pounded herbs with a grimy mortar and pestle.
Sensual. Yes, the Order of Eratonia is a rather unique branch of the healing arts. But our goddess is just as powerful and goddessy as any other goddess.
Argabella sat up a little to get her bearings, She'd expected the usual sort of healer's hut, spotless and spare, painted white and well-swept, with plenty of sunlight and scented with growing green things that looked healthful if bitter-tasting. What she found was a crowded, jumbled room, edged in dead plants and stacked dishes buzzing with flies. Buckets were everywhere on the ground, full of dark liquid that gave off a briny sort of smell. The beds weren't in neat rows at all, just haphazardly placed and tangled with sheets of burgundy silk. That seemed rather convenient, as bloodstains would totally disappear as they dried. As Belladonna ground her herbs, moving her arm up and down and heaving her bosoms, her body odor billowed into the room as if driven by a bellows. Yet despite having little faith in the healer's outer appearance, Argabella knew that she had been very near death and now was well enough to mentally complain about a lack of deodorant on the part of her savior. The chunks taken out by the hook tongues appeared to again be smooth, slightly furry skin with nary a dimple to poke.
"Where's Fia?"
she asked.
"The tall, curvy one with the muscles. Still out cold, carried you and the frozen glamour granny out of that cave like a hero. She look a bit rough just now, but I promise my cures work."
Belladonna pointed to a red-swathed cot in a dusty sunbeam by a dirty window, and Argabella nearly screamed. She was accustomed to seeing Fia's body, or at least the parts of it not concealed by her chainmail bikini, or the more recent partial armor. And so it wasn't the massive topography of flesh that threw her off. She rather liked that bit. No, it was the dozens of purple octopuses spread over Fia, their tentacles curling this way and that, in ways that made Argabella feel like she should cover her eyes.
"What is happening to her?"
Argabella wailed, struggling to untangle her legs from red silk sheets that smelled of roses and funk. Belladonna hurried to Argabella's side with a kind smile and gently pressed her back down onto the pillows.
"I told you, my medicine is unusual. Some healers use leeches." "Ah, no!"
Because Argabella remembered the acid leeches and wasn't anxious to revisit that cure.
"I'm allergic to leeches. And some healers use powdered mouse ears or dried wood lice or special mushrooms or maggots. But the healers of Eratonia are taught to use the healing powers of the sextopus."
Belladonna reached into one of the many buckets on the floor and pulled out an aubergine octopus, or sextopus really, as it had only six legs, and squashed it against her cheek, stroking it. For its part, the creature stared with intelligent, almost bedroomy black eyes and wrapped a tentacle around the woman's neck in a friendly sort of way.
"The sextopus secretes a healing slime as their suckers pull out any toxins or infection. Their slime reinvigorates the skin and organs. And in your case, regrows acid-burned flesh and fur. Don't you feel better?"
Argabella held up her arm, and it was true. She wasn't bleedful or even scabful, and her fur was silky and seemed to have new highlights.
I guess. Yeah.
As she looked around the room, she saw all of her friends in various stages of undress, covered with an indeterminate number of sextopuses. There was Fia, swirled in purple cartwheels of tentacles. Toby was flat on his belly, showing a lower back tattoo written in elvish script. Poltro was curled into a fetal position and sucking her thumb. Grinda was still frozen in place, although the sextopuses seemed to be trying to stretch her limbs into movement by using the bedposts. Even Gustav, flat on his side, had not escaped the cephalopod treatment. One sextopus straddled the goat's face, its tentacles curling about Gustav's horns and its eyes blinking black where Gustav's creepy yellow sort of judgmental eyes usually were.
"See," Belladonna said, "you've spent 3 days lying there, but naked and covered in sextopuses. So you have Fabio here to thank for the fact that you won't live the rest of your life with the tongue-shaped chunks taken out of your soft bits."
Belladonna held the sextopus, Fabio, out toward Argabella. After a strange silence in which Belladonna's sensual smile grew bigger and her eyelashes batted fiercely and forcefully, Argabella stuttered,
Thank you, Fabio?
Uncertain whether Sextopus's expected verbal gratitude, but at least half sure that Belladonna did.
Excellent!
Belladonna cried, dropping Fabio back in the bucket with a plop.
Now, you'll be hungry. My assistant, Bigelow, is fetching lunch as we speak, just to try to relax. You can't truly heal if you're anxious or twitchy. But I'm always anxious and twitchy. It's kind of my thing.
Belladonna rummaged about in a rusty tackle box and withdrew a crusty brown bottle. She sat on the edge of Argabella's small bed, just a little too close, her plush hip nudging Argabella's arm. Dipping her long-nailed finger into the bottle, she withdrew a substance that looked like old bacon grease mixed with curdled cheese.
This should do the trick.
Argabella reared her head back.
That doesn't look, sanitary.
Throwing back her head to laugh, Belladonna cried,
Sanitary! What is sanitation to do with healing?
When Argabella opened her mouth to explain that the answer to that question was basically everything, Belladonna slipped her finger in, depositing the paste on Argabella's tongue. The taste of, yes, old bacon grease and curdled cheese exploded in Argabella's mouth.
What the plot? Oh!
Argabella licked her lips and slid down a little, nestling into the lovely pillows. Everything suddenly felt very soft and squishy and pleasant, very blurry around the edges.
Ah, this,
she asked.
It's nice.
Belladonna patted her on the head.
It's opium, mixed up with old bacon grease and curdled cheese. That should help you relax. And hey, if you go back to sleep, all the better. Just don't act weird if you feel someone tenderly stroking you while you're unconscious.
A tremor of anxiousness fought for control of Argabella's body, but was only able to exert any force over her left eye, which bulged a bit.
Who's gonna stroke me? The Sextopuses. You're not healed all the way yet, and we must get you well. Yes, we must. Good bunny. I'm a good bunny.
With that, Argabella closed her eyes and dreamed of writing hit love songs and then doing her own taxes. When next she woke, Argabella was prepared for the stench and strangeness, but not for all the shouting.
Who are you? What is that smell? Where's Argabella? Why is there an octopus on me? And why in the name of all that's holy am I naked?
It was Fia, and she was past annoyed and moving firmly into murderous.
It's okay,
Argabella shouted.
It's all pretty weird, honestly, but it's fine. We're at the healer's hut.
Argabella rubbed her eyes until the crust, gluing them shut, crumbled out, then sat up to find Fia. The warrior was at maximum pump as she fought a sextuple of sextopuses, all of which were using their sticky tentacles to hold her down on the bed. Fia's face was flushed with fury, but her skin was almost completely healed and even glowing a little. On seeing Argabella, she went limp and smiled back.
Oh, hi. This is really awkward.
Belladonna!
Argabella called.
Bigelow? Anybody?
They appeared to be the only conscious people in the hut, and the smell was definitely less apparent than it had been the previous day. It was dawn, and the glow of orange lanterns lit the hut's interior, turning the mounds of dishes and junk into a mysterious nightmare topography for those not currently in the know and still recovering from the relaxing effects of yesterday's opium. Poor Fia, waking up like this, in the dark, alone, and covered in tentacles and slime. Argabella figured out where her feet were, remembered how to stand, stepped over Gustav, and wobbled over to Fia, all while ignoring the fact that she was wearing a hideous gown covered in faded ducklings that was open all down the back, showing her fuzzy little tail to anyone with eyes. Sitting on the edge of Fia's bed, she was careful not to touch the sextopuses, which were cautiously spreading back out across Fia's curves to complete their work. But she did put an experimental hand on Fia's arm in a comforting sort of way.
"Everything's fine,"
Argabella repeated, her voice low.
"I've never heard of this healing order before, and it definitely has its quirks. But from what I can tell, we're all going to be okay. I woke up yesterday and met the healer, and she's
trustworthy."
I was going to go with a bit of a hippie lunatic with a raging libido, but sure.
Argabella held out her arm, showing the lustrous new fur.
"Remember what this looked like in the caves? Raw, abraded with acid, bleeding and missing a few chunks?"
Fia stroked a finger down Argabella's arm, raising goosebumps that made the rabbit girl shiver.
"Wow. Yeah. I guess that's good work. You look amazing. When you passed out, I wasn't sure you were going to make it. I was terrified."
Argabella looked down, blushing under her fur and feeling warmth bloom in her chest. She remembered a little of that time, what it felt like to be cradled in strong arms and carried out of danger. Her whole life, she longed to feel safe and cherished, and she'd felt that with Fia even as the hooked tongues tore them to pieces. But the catacombs of yore hadn't claimed them, had they? It was a new dawn, and Argabella felt somehow more whole than she ever had. When she looked into Fia's eyes, her heart just about exploded with joy. The warrior made her feel strong and capable too, which was saying quite a lot.
"You saved my life, Fia. I don't know how you did it or where you found the strength, but you got me out of there. So thank you for that, my hero."
Returning the smile, Fia reached for Argabella's hand, twining their fingers together.
"Well, it's kind of crazy what a girl can do when she's in..."
"Loaves! Fresh loaves! Nomeric flour with ancient grains! Hot sticky buns! Robust eggs are ready to pop!"
The shrill voice from a vendor outside the grimy windows caused them to break away shyly, which was just as well, since Belladonna burst in the door seconds later in a cloud of funk. She had a basket over one arm and mud all over bare feet. A handsome youth wearing nothing but a flimsy linen kilt came in behind her, slamming the door in a way that would have gotten him kicked out of most healing huts and nicer restaurants.
"Ah, my little bun, you're awake again."
Belladonna crossed to where Argabella sat, took her face in both hands, and air-kissed her cheeks.
"And our fine fighter, you're conscious, just in time for breakfast. How do you feel?"
"What?"
was all Fia could manage. Belladonna was, even for those accustomed to strangeness, a lot to take in. She seemed to take up the entire healing hut as she bustled around, singing to herself and shimmying her hips as she danced and muttering chikapoom to herself. Soon she brought a platter to place on the bed beside Argabella. The piping hot loaf, probably from the noisy vendor outside, had the sort of artisanal feeling that Lord Toby couldn't quite conjure even on his best days. There were also chocolate-covered strawberries, figs, grapes, bananas, and oysters that smelled like they might be a day too late.
"Eat, eat,"
Belladonna urged.
"These are healing foods."
Argabella ripped off a hunk of bread and nibbled on a strawberry, just so the healer would stop staring at her so keenly. As she and Fia ate, Belladonna gave Fia another hideous robe, this one covered in capering bears, and removed the sextopuses one by one, remarking on their fine job and thanking them personally as she dropped them back into their dank, smelly buckets.
"Do I smell bread?"
Lord Toby popped awake one bed over, a tiny sextopus perched on his chin, with tentacles curling up either side of his jaw, in a rather fetching sort of violet beard. Argabella handed him a chunk of the loaf, hoping that they could skip the shoutful terror and outrage bit this time.
"Where?"
"This is the heart of Belladonna the healer. She does weird stuff, but it works. The octopuses are harmless and helpful."
Toby considered the sextopus attached to his chin, chewed his bread, and nodded conspiratorially, making the cephalopod waggle about like a purple tumor. He winked at Argabella to indicate that he totally knew what was going on.
Gotcha. Animal code phrases.
He changed his voice to an absurdly loud stage whisper.
The eagles are fond of moose milk,
he rasped.
And, the otters are giddy regarding tomorrow's gopher races?
I think Bigelow overdid his opium allotment,
Belladonna said, moving closer to pluck the tiny sextopus off Toby's chin, revealing an entirely bald patch of skin that they were obviously going to hear a lot about later. Lord Toby's eyes darted down to the healer's cleavage and stayed there, enraptured and almost entirely without pupils.
Hello, nurse,
the hedge wizard said.
What's a filthy hut like you doing in a bosom like this,
No, wait.
What's a filthy girl like this hut doing in the... No, that's not it, either. Hello, I'm the Dark Lord.
Belladonna smiled at him like he was five.
Well, hello, Dark Lord. I'm the healer, and I'm gonna fix all your nasty boo-boos.
Yeah,
Toby muttered.
Fix him good.
Bigelow, a little help. Maybe bring the Dark Lord some coffee to help him focus.
The attractive youth, whose mostly muscles and cleft chin, stumbled over a sextopus bucket and hurried to the pile of dishes.
Yes, ma'am. Of course, ma'am. Coffee it is. Right away. Yes, indeedy, coffee.
Bigelow?
Ma'am?
Remember how we talked about how you were better seen and not heard?
Bigelow gave a despicably sexy smile and winked a sparkling blue eye while tipping an invisible hat with one hand and pointing at his boss with the other. Argabella was fascinated to find that this gesture was both utterly ridiculous and pretty appealing in a weird sort of way. Soon the boy had bumbled over with a brown clay jug on a tray, which he placed carefully by Toby's side.
Why, we could be twins,
Toby noted, which made everyone laugh uproariously.
Bigelow will be admitted to the Sacred Order of Aerotonia next year,
Belladonna said.
He's been training under me for 3 years, and I work him hard. Night and day I pound him with fresh challenges, and he always rises to the occasion.
I have a very spacious tower, Toby told her, surrounded with well-trimmed hedges.
Belladonna smiled at him.
I bet you have a lovely tower.
I do, and hedgehogs, but...
That lady, You know, the sandy magic lady?
She has crabs.
I can make crackers out of nothing.
Bigelow,
Belladonna urged.
The coffee.
Nodding energetically, Bigelow put the jug to Toby's lips and whispered,
Down the hatch, sir.
Toby, being Toby, even when deeply drugged, he obligingly gulped the coffee down as rivulets trickled over his hairless chin. But Argabella was surprised to note that the coffee wasn't the dark brown of good dark coffee or the light brown of coffee mixed with cream and sugar. It was, apparently, a bright sort of green, a very poisonous-looking green, a green that she didn't feel so confident about.
Belladonna?
She asked, beginning to stand.
Is your coffee a different sort of coffee? Is it what?
Ah! Piquant!
Toby commented as he smacked his lips.
With an unusual fungal bouquet you don't find in many coffees, yet it possesses rare viscosity. This is a... unpleasant aftertaste. And burning?
Argabella pointed.
Is your coffee supposed to be
green and bubbly?
No! Bigelow, you fool!
Belladonna leapt to her feet and swept across the room in a swirl of fabric and black hair. Reaching for the jug, she wrenched it out of Toby's hands and threw it against the dingy wall, where it smashed to paint a swath of bright, violent green across the stained tan. As it dripped, the green liquid briefly formed a skull and crossbone shape, just in case anyone was unsure of its level of unsafeness. Argabella ran to the Dark Lord's side, but didn't get too close, as he was starting to foam a bit.
Toby?
Tastes like frogs and dire shrooms in a sherry reduction.
Toby sputtered.
That's because it is frogs and dire shrooms, toxic bog frogs from the figgish fen in the sky. I was whipping up a mortal smoothie to kill a troll hereabouts and clearly marked the jug with a sign that said, "Not the coffee!"
Belladonna practically shouted that last at Bigelow, who cringed.
"Oh,"
he said.
"Sorry, mistress. I must have misunderstood the part where it said, not, But I can fix that right away and fetch the real coffee."
"I don't think that's going to fix anything,"
Argabella said, pointing a trembling claw at their patient, whose unblinking eyes and stillness indicated that he was quite beyond all refreshment.
"I'm pretty sure the Dark Lord Toby is dead."
17. Under the lone lamppost, where lurks the squeaky marmoset of side quests. Paltrow had woken up in some pretty strange situations. There was that time Cutter had taken her hunting in the prune shoot forest, for example, and they'd woken up surrounded by blitzed boars that had broken open their cask of puissant porter while they slept and gotten bombed out of their piggy minds. But she'd never woken up with sextopuses all over her bits and Lord Toby being dead. That was a page in her life's book she'd never read before. She remembered her parents like faded vignettes, except for the super clear memory of that time they died screaming. All her more pleasant memories centered on Lord Toby. He'd been a bit peculiar and forgetful, but he'd never beaten her or allowed himself to get eaten by anything with a llama's face. She remembered the pride in his eyes the day she'd headed off to Cutter's Academy, riding the wrong way on Snowflake. Well, maybe that wasn't pride so much as concern, but she'd soon learned to ride a horse facing the head instead of the rump. Lord Toby had always brought her a nice wheel of cheese on her birthday and forgave her for fighting his chickens. And now he was gone, just like that? Her brain wasn't always a mighty thing, and it had quite a bit of trouble wrapping around a definitive lack of Lord Toby. She felt quite empty inside, but not the sort of empty that could be soon filled by food.
"She's in mourning,"
Belladonna kept reminding everyone, but Paltrow didn't care enough to explain that it was clearly the afternoon. All things considered, though, Paltrow supposed she should be grateful that she'd woken up at all. She'd dropped down into unconsciousness outside the healer's hut after helping drag Fia and Argabella there, and thought that was it. She'd been licked for good. But despite her being fully restored to health by Belladonna's purple squids, people kept asking if she was okay after she learned Lord Toby had died from chugging a bog frog smoothie. Fia sympathized and said she understood that frogs were just the worst, far more perilous than chickens, even when they were dead and blended into a nice foamy beverage. She hated frogs, and Paltrow managed to nod along and grunt as Fia talked about their many amphibious dangers. But even the talking goat looked worried. He nudged her with his horns and looked up at her with those goggly yellow eyes.
"Hey, you still wanna eat me someday, right? A nice curry? Very roguish of you."
"What? Oh yeah, it'd be... What were you saying?"
"Nope,"
the goat said to Fia.
"She's lost it."
"I did? What did I lose? Not the potions he gave me. My stuff, where's my cloak? I need my cloak!"
Belladonna fetched it, yanked it, really, out from underneath a pile of blood-stained clothing, and gave it to her. Those potions had suddenly become the most important thing the rogue could think of, and she didn't know what she'd do if they, too, were gone. Poltrow twisted the black cloak around frantically, looking for that inside pocket where she'd put the potions for safekeeping, realizing as she did so that she hadn't checked on their safety until now. They could have been smashed when she fell into the pit of acid leeches, or shattered when she tussled with the Lamatar in Yor's cavern. They might have been tongued into shardy oblivion. She hadn't even thought to use them when she was bleeding to death. She should have paid more attention, because if they were smashed... But no! Her fingers closed around them, and they were intact. Poltrow pulled out the vials in victory, holding them up in the lurid light of Belladonna's hut.
Yes! I still have them!
What are they?
Arcabella asked.
They are not to be taken rectally, but I've kind of forgotten otherwise. They're labelled, though, even if the instructions are kind of smeared like sad clown makeup. I think I can still make out the names. Let's see. Invisibility? Sleeping? Healing? Oh, that might have come in handy earlier. If I'd been awake, maybe I could have saved him.
She could have saved him, but she hadn't been quick enough or tough enough. Now she'd never get a chance to make Lord Toby proud. If only she'd been able to get that farm boy's heart, beating or not. If only she'd been a slippery enough rogue to steal Grinda's magic wand. If only she'd been able to smash staff the pixie like a flying roach. The whole quest just seemed so silly now. What was the point of questing if everyone was going to die anyway? If only, if only, if only. Poltrow had difficulty remembering much after that. Time slipped through her thoughts like lubra eels, and happenings were like blurry paintings ruined by splotches of someone's yacked-up lunch. There was some rain outside the hut, a rolling sort of meadow under gloomy skies with a lonesome red barn that reminded her of the farms in Borics. And they kept calling it the Grange. She was pretty sure they buried something there. Someone got paid some coins for helping them, and then they walked for a long time. Going to the lake? No, to the capital. To Songlin, capital on the lake. Enough of this, someone said, and Poltrow gasped as someone threw water in her face. It was the older lady, who looked younger and was moving a great deal more than she had previously. The sandwich, unfrozen, and very annoyed, judging by the smeary lines of her face.
Aye!
Poltrow protested.
That was wet!
Perhaps, she thought, that wasn't the brightest thing she'd ever said.
You've been in shock for a long time now. We need you to be present before we go into town.
Shock?
Over the Dark Lord's death, yes. Let's talk about it. What are you going to miss about him?
Miss? About the Dark Lord?
Poltrow felt tears welling in her eyes.
Cor! For his stupid, scraggly, wannabe beard. His obsession with artisanal crackers and cheese. Those grand luncheons with the invigorated ham jam.
There was more, much more, both good and bad. But as she listed those things and wept, she let them go. The others listened, sniffling a bit themselves. Whenever Poltrow faltered, Grinda grimly urged her on. Poltrow felt as if her heart were a particularly infected wound, and the older woman was squeezing it to get all the pus out. It hurt, but something about it felt good, too.
And his peculiar compulsion to be a Dark Lord. Cor, what a thought! Lord Toby was good at organizing a dinner party for two, but he was terrible at bringing people together, especially hedgehogs and turtles. But I imagine taxpayers and unions would have been a bit beyond his ken. Do you think he just woke up one day and said, I want to be a Dark Lord? Such folly!
She laughed until she cried again, then cried until she laughed. At last there was nothing left but a few chuckling hiccups. When she was finished, she looked up and saw the world with new eyes. Tiny details stood out, the leaves drifting to the ground. Birds pecking at peckish things, and Gustav munching disconsolately on some grass nearby, supremely bored.
That's right. Curry, kid,
Poltrow said, licking her lips.
Fatten up for me.
Gustav's head jerked up and around to regard her, and he spat out a mouthful of grass.
Hey! You're back to your old murderous, hungry self. That's great. Now stay away from me.
Paltrow would see to him later. Time would only serve to make him more succulent.
Time stewing in the pot, that is.
What are we doing now?
She asked.
We're after Lurker and Staff the Pixie, Grinda reminded her. Lurker is quite an accomplished wizard, mind you, and the grounds of his estate are protected. There's someone who knows how to get through the security, but she'll want something in return. And to find out where she is, we have to visit a rather unsavory halfling.
Does that mean he's sweet? Isn't sweet the opposite of savory?
No, it means that he's a rogue and smells bad.
So he's kind of like me at this point.
No, well, yes. Look, Paltrow, just let me do the talking after we all clean up and get something good to eat. The prospect of comfort plus comfort food cheered Paltrow considerable much as they approached the gate to Songlin. She would comfortably revel in comfort like a fluffy white kitten rolling around in comfy marshmallows. The guards, having seen it all, for most everything comes to the capital, waved them through without even making obvious comments about Fia's stature or Argabella's rabbit ears.
"That goat looks like he would cook up pretty nice,"
one remarked, and Paltrow grinned at him.
"I know, right?"
Gustav bleated in dismay and edged closer to Fia. Grinda led them to a fine inn in the High Waste district, where she apparently had favors owed her. The sign proclaimed it the Grand Balzac, and the wrinkled Balzac himself hastened to show them to fine rooms and have baths drawn for them, and inquired what they would like from the kitchen. An hour later, clean and refreshed, Paltrow joined the party downstairs for an exquisite supper, replete with a generous appetizer of candied nuts, the house specialty. Lord Toby's influence had informed her gourmet palate, and she indulged it in his honor. She had blistered pheasant cheeks on bourbon waffles with assorted bison bits and a light arugula medley on the side. Argabella enjoyed a homespun roasted artichoke pizza on gluten supernova dough. Fia wolfed down an entire cornucopia of heirloom squashes and mung bean sprouts in a rustic soy butter reduction and quaffed a tankard of elderberry mead. Grinda had a flash-seared monkfish fillet in a scraped hazelnut roux topped with a tart lime sea sponge. And Gustav ordered Balzac's sweaty shoes, flash-fried in beer batter and sprinkled with cinnamon and sugar. Fortified and feeling saucy, the cobbled streets of Songlin lit by whale oil lamps, they set out to rendezvous with Grinda's contact, one Humbert Beetlebone of the Cheap Meat Beetlebones, a halfling who made his living in the Sad Broad district by knowing more than anyone else about things he shouldn't know. As expected, Beetlebone sat alone on the back stoop of a liquor merchant, a single duckfat lantern on a round table providing illumination. A pipe and pint also sat on the table, ready to be enjoyed later. Everything, of course, was halfling size, made to fit the fingers and lips of a creep about the size of an 8-year-old child. No, Paltrow didn't trust this halfling at all. His friendly grin, sandwiched between two mutton chops engulfing the sides of his face, was surely a ruse to draw them in. He had olive skin like hers, carried an artisan-crafted leather bag, and appeared to be completely unconcerned that he was flaunting his wealth in a district known for pickpockets and footpads. A gold medallion gleamed on his hairy chest, spied through a loosely tied poet's shirt and an unbuttoned paisley waistcoat. The medallion testified to his membership in the dastardly rogues under Bigley Wick, the infamous and widely feared halfling criminal organization that had its chubby fingers in most everyone's pies. It was probably all the protection he needed. There were two kinds of halflings in Poltrow's experience, the kind that would trick you to rob you, and the kind that would trick you to kill you and then rob you, and all of them either wore that medallion or owed favors to someone who did. Grinda had no obvious reservations, however. She slapped a fake smile on her face to match Humbert's and greeted him like an old friend you secretly hated for a long time. He held out his palm, and she pressed a single coin into it. He frowned at the profound lack of jingling.
"That's it,"
he said, his voice in a grieved tenor with a pronounced northern accent.
"Simple question gets a simple coin, Humbert. I need to know where I can find Matilda tonight."
"Matilda!"
His eyes flicked among the party before him with frank curiosity.
"A fighter?
A bard and a rogue?
Going questing, are we?
What's the goat for? Dinner?
I'm for witty banter, Gustav said. Now answer the question. We're on a schedule.
The halfling chuckled and rolled the coin along the top of his knuckles.
You don't see a talking goat every day. Tell me about your friends, he said to Grinda.
Give me the coin back if we're going to barter. The halfling looked pained.
It's just an introduction. You know I can find out who they are anyway.
Then go ahead and find out, Humbert. I've paid you, and generously, too, for what is probably common knowledge in town. So tell me where to find Matilda tonight. He grimaced.
I've heard she's in Fredhem this week, in the alley behind Tasty Tom's Blue Orbroom.
Thanks.
Need anything else? Magic rings? A thing that does stuff?
Hey, I don't suppose any of you folks could use some flesh honey?
In response, Argabella abruptly vomited on him, loudly, violently. Chunks of roasted artichoke and pizza dough soaked in stomach acid sprayed him down in a high-pressure geyser, and he recoiled, howling in horror.
Sorry, sir.
Argabella quavered, wiping off her twitching whiskers with a furred hand.
I have a bad reaction whenever anybody says that.
What's your name?
He demanded, all his friendly demeanor dissolved as a sodden artichoke chunk slipped off his nose and splatted on his lap.
Tell me your name!
No, don't, Grinda said, warning Argabella. Let's just go. She apologized, Humbert, and it wasn't on purpose, just an accident.
Oh, no,
Humbert said, shaking his head and sending bits of dough flying from his hair.
One does not simply vomit on a halfling and walk away. That would set a disgusting precedent.
He rose to his feet and pointed a stubby finger at the bard, her stomach contents dripping off him as he moved.
You're gonna pay one way or another. Pay quite a lot or be made an example of.
He was so focused on Argabella, and everyone else was so focused on him, that they were all quite surprised when Fia swept her sword diagonally down from the point where his head met his neck and continued to the opposite side, underneath his arm, causing his head and shoulder to slide off from the rest of his body. His heart squeezed once more in surprise, showering them all with blood, and then Humbert Beetlebones' bones fell over dead.
Cool! I just took a bath!
Baltro complained, but the sandwich didn't think that was very significant.
Are you mad? She yelled at Fia.
You practically halved a halfling.
He threatened our bunny, Fia explained. And don't worry, nobody saw us.
That doesn't matter. They'll find out, they always do.
So what?
Fia wiped off her sword on Beetlebone's trousers and sheathed it.
I don't get it. Why is everybody in the West so afraid of halflings? They're easier to chop up than most.
I forgot you're from the Far East, Grinda said. He was a drub, a dastardly rogue under Bigglywick.
What?
A member of the halfling mob. You can always tell by the medallions they wear.
Oh, that's what they mean. That's what that one creep must have meant by a consortium.
What creep?
Probably a friend of Beetlebones here. I owe him 40% of whatever I got out of the tower. But he can't have even 1% of Argabella.
We'll have to worry about it later. Let's just get to Fredhem. And let me take care of this. She took out her wand, said,
Clino Zemeticos,
and wicked away the blood from their clothes and skin. They tried to hurry away without precisely looking like they were hurrying, all the while worrying, or at least Poltra was worried. She knew very well that it was not wise to cross the halflings, and she fretted about the possible consequences all the way from Sad Bra through Skidmark and St. Codpiece to an alley behind Testy Tom's. It smelled of repressed desire and unwanted potatoes. A single lamppost burned the midnight whale oil, a nimbus of yellow-orange light settling over wooden crates and piles of refuse. Their footsteps clacked and echoed off the stone walls of the buildings on either side.
Matilda!
Grinda called, but Poltro didn't see anyone in the alley at all.
Matilda, it's your old friend, Grinda the Sandwich.
Grinda?
A tiny voice squeaked, and the stacks of crates underneath the lamppost wobbled and made a peculiar scratching sound. Poltro drew her dagger, expecting some sort of vile, terrible clawed, chicken-based monster. The boxes shuddered, and that monster proved to be a tiny, adorable primate.